On the docket is Mark O'Hara, Wright versus Commonwealth, Mr. Holleran and Mr. Corder, and for the Commonwealth, Ms. Bumgardner, who will be arguing.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Justin Corder. I'm here today with John Holleran, representing the appellant, Mark O'Hara, Wright, on 5 assignments of error.
Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, Mr. Corder?
I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Please proceed.
Thank you. There are 5 assignments of error before the court. We've challenged the sufficiency of the evidence related to 5 separate charges that our client, Mr. Wright, was convicted of at trial in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I'd like to focus on 3 of those primarily. If I may, I'll take you to later in the day on the dating question. You remember that the testimony at trial was that Deputy Greathead of the Rockingham County Sheriff's Department responded at a certain point in the evening to a residence in Rockingham County. While there and speaking with a couple of people, they complained to him of a smell in the house.
You're speaking now to your second, third, and fourth assignments of error?
Yes, Your Honor.
The occurrences
you,
at the house?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. They complain of a smell of the house, a gassy, chlorine-like smell. He enters the residence with a gas mask on and immediately proceeds down the stairs to the basement of this at least 2-story house. When he gets to the basement, forgive me, Your Honor, when he gets to the basement, he goes around a couple of corners, goes down a hallway until he gets to a very small room in the back of the basement where he testifies that he encounters Robert Wright, the appellant's brother, approximately 10 or 12 feet away from him. He sees that Robert Wright is holding a beer in his left hand, his right hand is empty. He instructs him to get on the ground. Robert Wright does not do that. Instead, he approaches Deputy Greathead, and as he begins to walk towards him, he gets close to it. There's a water heater in the little room. He places the water heater, Deputy Greathead testified, was 2 or 3 feet away from Deputy Greathead. Robert Wright places his beer on the water heater, drops his left arm, Deputy Greathead testified, behind the water heater. And 1 or 2 seconds later, right at that point, Deputy Greathead testifies that he sees an orangish, reddish cloud come toward him from that area right behind the water heater, right next to, right by Robert Wright. At that point, Deputy Greathead backs out of the residence. He goes back upstairs. He leaves the house.
Now, where was the defendant when this gas was released?
Your Honor, we would submit there's simply no evidence of where Mark Wright was introduced to trial during this assault of Deputy Greathead.
But he was in the basement.
There's no evidence of where that he was even in the basement at that point in time. There's evidence that he was discovered in the basement 2.5 or 3 hours later when the police ultimately made entry into the residence. But it's important to note that at this point, when Deputy Greathead goes into the residence, goes directly to the basement, he did not complete a sweep of the upstairs floor. He did not sweep the basement. This is a 2-story house with multiple bedrooms, living rooms, kitchens, bathrooms, hallways. There's no sweep or search conducted. He just goes to the basement, to this little room.
Well, what about the aunt's testimony that both Wright and Robert were in the basement?
Your Honor, I did not see any testimony that they were in the basement at that point. There's testimony that they thought they were killing themselves, but there's no specific mention of who they thought were in the basement. They said Mark Wright, there was testimony that he stayed there occasionally. Certainly the police thought they were in the house, but there's no specific testimony there was no evidence that the aunt or any of the people else in the house had gone into the basement before Deputy Greathead went down there and was assaulted by Robert Wright.
Did she testify that they were both in the basement?
I did not see that testimony in the transcript, Your Honor, anywhere. There are statements they make when they complain to Greathead about the gas. They make statements like, they're killing themselves. And I believe those are the kinds of statements the Commonwealth points to. I did not see any statement that Mark Wright is in the basement right now. Even if he was in the basement at that point, there are multiple rooms, bedrooms, living rooms within the basement. But the problem is, Your Honors, there's simply no evidence of where Mark Wright was in the house at that point in time. The only point in time when anyone can point to his location in the house is approximately 2.5 or 3 hours later, when police ultimately make entry into the residence. So for those reasons, we would submit that the malicious injury by means of a caustic substance, the assault and battery of a law enforcement officer, and likewise the obstruction of justice charge, the evidence was simply insufficient to convict Mark Wright of those charges. I would note that Robert Wright was convicted of similar charges related to those incidents. That evidence came in the trial. If I may now, Your Honor, move backwards in time to earlier in the afternoon, earlier in the day. The whole incident began when Robert Wright and Mark Wright, our client, were at a Martin's grocery store in Harrisonburg, a couple of miles down the road. They went into Martin's, appeared to select some beer, some deli sandwiches, and then walk out of Martin's without paying for those items. And Martin's employee, Garrett Atkins, sees them walk out towards the exit. He begins to follow them towards the exit. The testimony was that as they get to the parking lot, Mark Wright and Robert Wright split up a little bit. They go at least around different sides of a vehicle. Garrett Atkins, the Martin's employee, approaches Robert Wright, and he challenges Robert Wright and says, you know, show me your receipt. Let me see your receipt. Doesn't believe that he has a receipt, so Mr. Atkins testified that he took the beer from Robert Wright's hands, and that Robert Wright then took the beer back from the hands of Mr. Atkins. There's an interaction with C.W., who is Robert's stepson, where he felt that his father was being threatened by this plain-clothed Martin's employee. So they have some words exchanged. Foul language.
You agree that a larceny from the person had occurred when Robert grabbed the beer?
By Robert Wright, yes, I believe. He was convicted of that, I believe.
And then Robert got in the van, and as I recall, your client yelled, let's go, and drove off?
Well, Your Honor, there was no evidence of that Mark Wright was driving the vehicle on the date in question, and there was no evidence. In fact, the only evidence that was introduced as to who made that statement, let's go, was that Nike Lee Wright, Robert's other son, was the one who was driving that van and who said, let's go, when he saw his stepbrother, C.W., interacting with Garrett Atkins, the Martin's employee. But there's simply no evidence introduced at trial that Mark Wright was driving the van at any point on that day in question. Garrett Atkins did testify that he heard somebody say, let's go, but he could not say who said it. He only knew that Mark Wright was somewhere on the other side of the vehicle. There's no evidence as to how close they were, whether he was just 8 or 10 feet away, whether he was 15 or 20 or 25 or 50. There's no evidence as to how close they were. He just heard somebody say, let's go. But the evidence that came in, I believe, was that Nike Wright said that to his stepbrother when he saw the interaction with Garrett Atkins. There certainly is just zero evidence that Mark Wright was ever driving the vehicle on the date in question. So for those reasons, we would submit that there's no evidence to show that Mark Wright encouraged or incited or aided and abetted, or even that he was aware at all of this interaction between Garrett Atkins and Robert Wright in the parking lot at Martin's there. The Commonwealth does make the argument that because there was a concert of action earlier on in Martin's, that Mark Wright is then responsible for the incident in the parking lot as well. We would submit that that's not the case in this case. When the courts, this court and the Supreme Court of Virginia, look at concert of action, they look at the separate offenses to see whether or not they are similar offenses, whether they're similar elements, whether the second offense, if you will, is a natural and probable consequence of the first. In McMorris v. Commonwealth, the Supreme Court of Virginia looked at a case where there was, I believe, 5 defendants assaulting a victim. They assaulted a victim, and at some point, one of the assailants robbed the victim as well, took his wallet and some property from the victim. And the Supreme Court had to deal with the question of whether robbery was a natural and probable consequence of an assault, and that because essentially there were different offenses with different elements, that robbery is that assault is more of a physical problem.
But here we're dealing with a larceny.
Yes, Your Honor.
A species of larceny. And of course, larceny is a continuing offense. The crime occurs as long as the stolen property is being transported. and concealed later on in the basement of the house?
We are, Your Honor. We have a shoplifting, a petty larceny charge that at least is completed, but I understand it's a continuing offense, but completed when they leave Martin's. At that point, a petty larceny has occurred. The evidence, though, show that they separate in the parking lot at some point, and then what happens is more of a robbery, at least it was charged as a robbery.
It's a larceny from the person. That's what we're dealing with.
Right, Your Honor.
So when that larceny from the person occurred, that larceny from the person continued as long as that property was being transported. It's a continuing offense. Am I correct or no?
I believe you are, Your Honor. The distinction I would make is that the Mark Wright was initially charged with robbery. It became a larceny from a person through jury instructions, essentially, later, where that
well,
was...
Well, we're concerned what he was convicted with, not
yeah,
with that with
yes,
which he was charged.
And but we would submit that the elements of even grand larceny from a person and petty larceny are different in that grand larceny is a felony charge that requires a taking from the person. There's an act of force or violence there where you're directly engaged with the body, the person of another, taking something from their...
doesn't require, if force or violence are involved, then it's a robbery.
It can be, Your Honor. Yes, sir. Certainly. But we would submit that it's a different offense than merely something as simple as taking a deli sandwich or a candy bar from a grocery store.
Well, if someone sneaks up behind me and takes my wallet out of my back pocket, and I don't even feel it, isn't that still a larceny from the person as long as I've got a $5 bill in it?
It would be, Your Honor. Yes, sir.
So why isn't taking the beer from the possession of the store clerk a larceny from the person?
Well, we would submit that it was a larceny from a person committed by Robert Wright, but we submit that it's not in that interaction in the parking lot there was not a natural and probable consequence of Mark Wright taking the deli sandwich from the store.
You're into your rebuttal now. You may continue or you may reserve. Got you.
Just
a little deeper than
that. If I may just briefly mention, Your Honor, we do argue for the first time on appeal that the Commonwealth did not prove an element of the offense of grand larceny of a person, that it did not meet the burden to prove that the value of the beer taken from Mr. Atkins was worth $5 or more. There was only a general total value given, but no evidence was given as to that specific property. We recognize that the ends of justice exception requires more than just a lack of proof of an element. In Jimenez v. Commonwealth, for example, Ball v. Commonwealth, this court, the Supreme Court of Virginia, look to whether there's something more than just lack of proof, such as an improper instruction given to the jury related to that offense. In Jimenez, the Commonwealth failed to prove an element of defense, but also instructed the jury improperly related to that offense. We submit that that's exactly what happened here. If the court would look at appendix page 309, the jury instruction given for robbery purported to allow grand larceny from a person as a lesser included. But significantly, the elements for grand larceny from a person were not properly described in that jury instruction. It seems to have allowed the jury to conclude he was guilty of grand larceny from a person if they found that the property was taken either from the person of Garrett Atkins or in his presence. That element of or in his presence is not an element of grand larceny from a person. So that we would ask the court to allow us to make that argument on appeal.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. May
Good
it
morning,
please the court.
Hunter.
I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Commonwealth. Your Honors, these are sufficiency matters. That means that the standard is whether any reasonable jury could have found the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The fact that the defendant's family members and came in to court and gave some testimony that contradicted the Commonwealth's witnesses does not mean that the evidence from the Commonwealth's witnesses disappears. The Commonwealth is entitled to all reasonable inferences, and in part, this was a circumstantial case. Starting with the grand larceny from the person issue, it is simply not true that we have no idea how far away the defendant was from Mr. Atkins. Mr. Atkins said he watched the defendant and his brother walk out of the store together, next to each other, each had a case of beer, they had some sandwiches, they walked up to a Dodge Caravan, and that's when they split to go on either side of the Dodge Caravan.
Who went to the driver's side?
The defendant. And that's what's said on page 56 of the appendix and on page 61 of the appendix. The defendant was, quote, standing on the driver's side of the vehicle, end quote. And Atkins also said, quote, he was already on the other side of the vehicle when I got there. Atkins also said he could see him through the passenger side door. And that's when Atkins and Robert Wright, the defendant's brother, tussle over the beer, and CW comes in and threatens Atkins. And then the defendant, according to Atkins, says, let's go, let's go, let's go. He throws his beer in the car. The brother throws his beer in the car, and they drive away, with the defendant as the only person on the driver's side. Atkins says just three people are there at page 57 of the appendix. So yes, Nike Wright came in and said, I was there the whole time, and that's not what happened. I was driving. The jury disregarded that, perhaps in part because there was police testimony that Nike Wright showed up well into the standoff and said, I just got back from work. I heard something was going on with my father. The jury rejected this evidence and clearly had enough evidence to find that the defendant drove the getaway car and the defendant hurried everybody up right around the time of the grand larceny from the person. Similarly, the jury had enough evidence to find that at the very least, the defendant was a principal in the second degree of the gassing of the deputy. There was evidence that the defendant was in the basement at the time of the gassing. There was testimony that the police had already secured the perimeter at that time. After the first smell of gas, before going to the basement, Deputy Greathead was the last one to exit the first floor. The defendant's own aunt testified that the defendant was in the basement before he was gassed. And to say that, I'm relying on page 139 of the appendix, where his aunt says, we're hollering, screaming for them to please come up. I said, if you're down there, come up. And they didn't come up. Nobody came up. And from that time on, it was a nightmare. Every policeman in Harrisburg was there. And then further down, I was already back downstairs in about maybe 5 feet from the basement, and he, meaning Deputy Greathead, told me to get on back stairs. And I said, I can't. They're my nephews. And then also on page 143, she was asked, and you walked a little ways down the steps to the basement, is that right? And she answered, yes, I went back to the basement and said, are you all down there? What's going on? Please come up. That you all is the defendant and his brother, who are not taken out of the basement until hours later, after the police have fully secured the house and have to go into the basement and physically remove them. So the jury could clearly had enough evidence to believe the defendant was in the basement at the time of the gassing. They also had photos and testimony that they could have found that the defendant was the one behind the water heater. He was the one who released the gas. As Robert was approaching the police officer who had his light and gun trained on Robert, Robert puts his beer down, is stepping out from behind the water heater, and that's when the gas is released. We know that at some point the defendant was at that water heater because his beer is sitting on the water heater in the photos from the scene. There simply was enough, and also there was no question he came direct contact with the gas because he had to be decontaminated just like Robert and just like Deputy Greathead. There was enough evidence for the jury to find that he actually released the gas. And alternately, there was sufficient evidence to find that he was at the very least a principal in the second degree, in that he assented to it, he lent it his countenance and approval, and was thereby aiding and abetting it. And finally, for the same reasons, I believe the issue of whether or not the defendant was acting in concert, was a principal in the second degree with the grand larceny from the person, presuming he was, there was certainly enough evidence to convict him of contributing to CW's delinquency because he involved CW in the crime. At the very least, CW was waiting in the van while they entered the store to steal. At the worst, he was their lookout and their muscle. Are there any questions?
I have nothing for us.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. I urge you to affirm.
Mr. Cordy, you have 2 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just really briefly then, regarding the evidence of the interaction in the parking lot, there simply was no evidence that Mark Wright was driving the vehicle that day. It does not appear in the trial transcript. Mr. Atkins.
By inference.
The fact that he was present.
On the driver's side.
On the vehicle, but on the passenger door is a minivan, and the testimony, I believe, was that he was by he got in the passenger door, okay. not the driver's door, from my recollection of the testimony. Mr. Atkins, I did not see anywhere in the transcript where he testified that there were only three people there. That's not said at trial. So for that reason, we would make the same argument that evidence was insufficient. Regarding the incident in the basement, then, the Commonwealth argues that Mr. Deputy Greathead was the last one to exit the first floor. That statement does not appear in the trial transcript. He said he was the last one to exit following the group of women, but he also testifies, I did not sweep the first floor. We didn't search the house. I just went to the basement.
Wasn't the house
secure? Deputy Greathead testifies when he gets there, he goes around back first for several minutes knocking with no answer. He's the only officer there. Then he goes around front, knocks for several minutes with no answer. And walks back out to his patrol car at that point.
Did she refer to the people in the basement in the plural? They are in the basement?
That came in, but there's no evidence she was in the basement ever or knew who was in the basement. Mm-hmm. The only evidence was she tried to go down and Deputy Greathead stopped her and pulled her back out.
Didn't she? But on several occasions she used the phrase they. Might kill themselves. And isn't the logical conclusion that there's more than one person in the basement?
There could have been. The problem was the evidence.
And can we draw some inferences, logical inferences, from this circumstantial evidence?
Someone could say he might have been in the basement, Mark Wright. But being in the basement, again, we would submit, is not enough to convict him. The basement contained multiple rooms, bedrooms, living room, kitchen, hallways,
By the time of the spraying, the SWAT team was there. Certainly the house was secure by then, wasn't it?
The evidence is that the SWAT team did not come until later.
The spraying?
Right. The spraying only occurred. Deputy Greathead was the only officer. There might have been one other officer responding at that point, but he was the only officer in the house, and he comes back out, and that's when he gets help from a second officer.
All right, you may bring it to conclusion if you wish.
Yes, Your Honor. We would simply submit that there was no evidence that Mark Wright participated in any way with the assault on the officer or in the larceny from the person, and we would ask the court to reverse the convictions. I would rely on our briefs for the delinquency of the minor charge.
Thank you very much.